This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Margaret, that heat that's been generated in Washington over the budget debt reached the whole country last week. It was quite hot up here. Did you find any relief?
Well, wasn't really looking for it. I love this hot weather, and after the winter that we had, it was a welcome relief. The good news, actually, it appears that people listened to the advice and toned down their activities, tried to stay cool, and there was very little heat-related illness or injury that we heard about.
Well, I think it went to the head of the Washington Post pollers. They were out there trying to figure out what people thought about the heat wave, and they decided to label it the sweat ceiling heat wave. So apparently they have confused the debt ceiling issue with the heat wave, and that does happen in Washington.
This has now been daily news, it seems like, for months. And that deadline, which once seemed months away, is very fast approaching and only a matter of days. The suggestions, well, they seem to change even more rapidly than our New England weather. We had the drama recently of House Leader John Boehner walking away from talks with President Obama because they couldn't find any middle ground. And now they've both taken to the airwaves to make their case to the American public.
Well, the plan that emerged from Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and the proposal announced the same day by House Speaker Boehner overlap in some way. The difference is mostly in timing. Both identify about $1 trillion in spending cuts to the day-to-day operating budgets of government agencies, and both would create a bipartisan congressional commission to identify further deficit reductions, especially in major health care programs such as Medicare and Medicaid.
Well, we've seen plans that call for cuts of trillions of dollars from the budget and the entitlements. We've seen calls for the elimination of tax loopholes and calls for the addition of new taxes. And, you know, I was watching an analysis recently that said it's a little bit hard to tell now which are the Democrat and which are the Republican proposals.
It is true. And we will be paying close attention to what emerges this week and through the weekend. Although temperatures are supposed to be a little more normal, things are still hot in Washington.
Well, and I have to think that they're hot around the country in congressional districts, too, as people begin to prepare or are already actively engaged in congressional elections. And you just can't sort out what is going on in Washington from what's going on in those home districts.
Engaging more with your community is always a smart idea. You know, our guest today did just that when he set up his primary care practice in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Dr. Jay Parkinson has a unique story and a unique healthcare service, for that matter. He launched Hello Health in 2008, but has more recently moved on to launch the innovation firm The Future Well, which designs services and products that create health and happiness. We welcome Jay to our show today.
Well, health and happiness, certainly a timely and needed topic, and we're happy he can join us. No matter what the story, you can hear all of our shows on our website, chcradio.com. Subscribe to iTunes and get the show downloaded, or if you want to hang on to our every word and read a transcript of the shows, come visit us at chcradio.com. And don't forget, you can become a fan of Conversations on Healthcare on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
As always, if you have feedback, email us at chcradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Before we speak with Dr. Jay Parkinson, let's check in with our producer, Lauren Bonner, with headline news.
I'm Lauren Bonner with this week's headline news. The First Lady's Let's Move campaign to fight childhood obesity is coming through on one of its key promises. Major food retailers, big and small, throughout the country have pledged a commitment to expand over 1,500 stores to help provide healthy, affordable food to millions of people who live in food deserts. First Lady Michelle Obama says this is key to confronting the problem head-on to end the obesity epidemic.
We can talk all we want about calorie counts and recipes and how to serve balanced meals. But if parents can't buy the food they need to prepare those meals, if their only options for groceries are in the corner gas station or the local mini-mart, then all of that is just talk.
Across the country, 23 million Americans, including 6.5 million children, live in underserved communities that do not have easily accessible fresh foods at affordable prices. Another battle is emerging over last year's Affordable Care Act. The legislation called on the Independent Institute of Medicine to make recommendations about preventive healthcare services for women. The advisory panel recommends that all insurers be required to cover contraceptives for women free of charge as one of several preventive services under the new healthcare law. Women's groups and medical professionals applaud the recommendation, while the Roman Catholic Church fiercely opposes it. Obama administration officials say they are inclined to accept the panel's advice and that the new requirements could take effect for many plans at the beginning of 2013.
Today, Margaret and I are speaking with Dr. Jay Parkinson. Jay launched the online healthcare services Hello Health in 2008. More recently, in February 2010, he co-founded the innovation firm The Future Well to design services and products that create health and happiness. He's been called the doctor of the future and one of the 10 most creative people in healthcare by Fast Company. Welcome, Jay. We have a saying at our health center, when you're designing health services, make them efficient, effective, and elegant. And that's why your story grabbed both Margaret and I so much. So you do your first residency in pediatrics and then your second in preventative medicine at Johns Hopkins. Then you set up a practice in a very unique way in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. You get online and you tell your neighbors who want to be your patients, look at my Google Calendar, choose a time. Your iPhone alerts you. You show up at their house. They pay you with PayPal. Jay, pinch me. House calls powered by the internet. I love it. Why did you come up with this model? And tell me, what was the public's response?
Well, I came up with the model simply because I could. I mean, it made sense to me. It was, you know, when you look at any process, there's a complex way to do things and a very simple way to do things. And I just figured that process was the simplest thing to do. And it was also by far the cheapest thing to do. So coming off of a residency, I didn't have a lot of money to invest in my own practice. So I literally sat down and designed the website myself, spent about a month doing it. And I invested about $1,500 into this, and that's what started my practice. So, I mean, I did it because I could. But what was so great about it was, you know, I launched and it blew up on the internet. And I had about 7 million hits on my website in the first, I think, 2 months of practicing. So I never was short for patients at all. I mean, that said a lot to me, that just the American public is ready and willing for convenience and relationships in healthcare.
I think we were really stunned by that 7 million hit figure. It's like Facebook, move over. But Jay, some of the component pieces of your approach to practice, electronic health records, telemedicine, opportunities to connect with your provider by email and Skype, are now available in many, though certainly by no means most practices. But having heard you speak, I would characterize your focus as being less about the technology and more about the relationship. And you've spoken about medicine as being not about treating people, but about inspiring people. Tell us more about that philosophy and its place in healthcare today.
Well, sure. Technology to me is just an enabler. I mean, you know, it's just an augment to the real world relationships that we have. I mean, I have something like 1,900 quote unquote friends on Facebook, but, you know, obviously I don't have 1,900 relationships. You know, to me, the relationship is all about, you know, the real life communication that you have with your neighbors and your friends. So that to me is what, you know, healthcare should be about. We should probably take everything back to the simpler days of just the neighborhood doctor and, you know, making house calls, because, you know, the real problems that we have nowadays are social problems. People eating too much, people not getting enough exercise, and, you know, really getting to know their neighbors and their friends. Those are the problems that we have. And so how are we as doctors going to be able to, you know, inspire our patients to live a better, happier life? You can't do that if you don't know them, if the only time you see them is in some sterile doctor's office. So to me, it's just, you know, healthcare needs to go back to the basics and to really just inspire people through real relationships.
Jay, you've been thinking about more than inspiring people, but thinking critically about the intersection of public health and urban design. And you've spoken about creating a new space for providers in what you call public health 2.0, a space where doctors are not focused in about how to make us live longer, but to live happier. You know, we just celebrated July 4th the other day, and the entire proposition was life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Is this a new declaration for the medical community? And tell us more about what you're thinking about this new space.
Well, I think so, absolutely. I mean, it's sad to me that, you know, I just got about half a lecture on nutrition, behavioral modification, you know, the things that actually do some good when you're practicing medicine for people. You only get, as a medical student, a few lectures on all of these, you know, really important things. So to me, I mean, doctors don't really think about medicine within the context of everyone's daily life. They always think of it within the context of, you know, pills and scalpels. And that's a problem. I mean, we need to really understand that pills and scalpels aren't going to save us from, you know, many of the problems that just living a happy life can solve. The problem, though, is what is happiness? that's something that's difficult to define. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, if I get this new job and, you know, or if I, you know, get married to this lovely woman, I'll be happy. But then they figure out that, well, you know, once I've gotten this new job, well, maybe I'll just get this next thing and then I'll be happy. So happiness is more of a process than a goal. And I think that I think people need to realize that, and I think doctors need to speak of it that way.
You know, Jay, as I listen to you, I always feel like I can almost hear a background chorus of people raising their eyebrows and saying, well, that's kind of healthcare for yuppies. But far from it. From what I understand, your practice is certainly in one of the most diverse areas of the country, in Brooklyn, and your practice is very diverse, young people and old, affluent and not, English-speaking and not, relatively healthy, and those who are quite frail. And our current system in some ways is kind of rigid, right? Requires patients to come into the office and receive care according to a pretty traditional format. So I'd be curious, what have you learned from this practice that you've pioneered, which in many ways, as you say, is a return to a earlier day of making, not just making house calls, but establishing the relationship with patients in their home. And while many practices around the country are now being set up to do that for the homebound, you're really choosing to do it at home because of the unique interaction that you think you have with people in that setting. Tell us more about that, and how is that being passed on to the next generation of medical students and residents as an experience?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know if it can be passed down to, you know, to medical students currently. I think the only way you can do that is to actually practice this way and then write about it and inspire other, you know, medical students to write in and ask you questions. That's sort of what I mean by inspiration. It's more about, you know, living the optimal life and inspiring others to follow your lead. I mean, that to me is what this practice was. It was an optimal practice. I had young and old in the practice. I thought it was interesting that my oldest patient, the oldest patient at Hello Health, was 92. And it was fascinating because her son lived in California while this woman lived just right around the corner. And he would talk to her and go online and do all the health management for her. She was blind. You know, she couldn't see. But, you know, she obviously didn't understand technology. But that, to me, is a really interesting opportunity because that's almost like a whole new profession, people helping others. Either family members or you know, friends, manage their healthcare online. So to me, that was really interesting. Again, it was all about technology enabling real relationships and the power that, you know, the internet has, that people can log in anywhere to have that sort of real relationship, to augment that real relationship is has never been seen.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today, we're speaking with Dr. Jay Parkinson, co-founder of Hello Health and the Future Well. Jay, go back to, and let's talk a little more about Hello Health. And I know you've moved on to the Future Well, but tell us what you know about their model right now. Is it available to other practices? I believe it's free to qualified practice. But more importantly, who's been receptive to this model around the country, both from provider and patient perspective?
The doctors that typically sign up with Hello Health are doctors that are just curious. They're, you know, technology early adopters. and they're curious and doing things a different way. So that to me is a really vital sort of characteristic that doctors should have, is just the freedom to experiment with their practice. And right now it's difficult to do that in today's environment.
Jerry, in listening to you describe that kind of practice and some of the ideals of your practice, it's easy to get a picture of you operating a bit as a lone ranger, right? A one-person show, or any provider practicing in that system being on their own. And yet we know it is a team of people, whether it's a virtual team or a direct team in a practice, that's needed, particularly for people with chronic disease and people who are needing to be in other settings like hospitals from time to time. Maybe we could talk a little bit about how does that team exist in a virtual sense in the kind of model you've developed, because I think you'd agree with me, it's very hard for one person alone to manage healthcare for all but perhaps the most well among us.
Yeah, that's a difficult challenge. But if you look at Facebook groups and Google groups and you know, things like Basecamp online for project management, where multiple people are coming together to solve a project or to work on a project and solve a problem, it's the same thing that healthcare is. And that's what's interesting to me. I looked at a lot of these project management software web applications and just saw exactly, you know, how they were solving this process of, you know, creating a website or you know, designing a new advertising space. That's the same problem. I look at sort of all of patients as, you know, little projects. And it's fascinating to think that, you know, we go to work every day and we have a few projects that we're working on, but doctors have about 1,500 projects that they're working on. And so the technology needs to reflect that.
Jay, we're all concerned about training the next generation of providers who will be available to provide primary care. You talked a little earlier with Margaret about you're not sure where the training will come for this unique intersection of primary care and urban design. But I want you to sort of pull the thread a little more on some of the principles around this. And I think you call them everyday designers, providers who optimize your health and inspire you. Well, walk through some of those principles and really focus a little on the urban designing side. I've heard you talk about, you know, creating spaces that become places, sort of walkable, livable neighborhoods. But if there's no one training there, I guess we're going to turn to you. You're the expert on it. Lay out your vision about where people might go who are listening to the show, who are providers, and thinking as you do about this opportunity.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's fascinating to think that, you know, doctors don't get any of this training. But, yeah, I do like to think of this as public health 2.0. It's sort of looking at that immediate space in which you live, your neighborhood, and figuring out, you know, is it designed for walkability? Is it designed with green spaces? Is it designed for real relationships with your neighbors? I mean, is it a space without stoops so that you don't get to, you know, hang out on your front stoop and get to know your neighbors? I had a friend who once said, his father said, you know, TV didn't kill society. The content of television didn't kill society. What killed society, or TV killed society, by getting people off their stoops. And I think that's a really interesting, you know, insight, because if you look at, you know, the internet, you look at our modern society, it's less and less about relationships and, you know, not knowing your neighbors, more and more about sort of engaging with screens. And it's just sad. But the problem is, I guess, we don't really know the solution. And happiness in the scientific community is sort of so waffly that it's difficult to really get a lot of, you know, foothold within that system. So to me, you know, the most important thing is to not know the answers, but to keep talking about it and get the conversation started, because, you know, these solutions are going to take 30, 40 years. But most importantly, it's about the kind of neighborhood that you live in and the type of workspace that you work in.
Well, Well, let me pull that thread, Jay, if I can, about design a little bit. And as you know from speaking with us, we put a lot of thought into the design of our primary care centers to reflect both the neighborhood needs and also our model of primary care. And I was very interested to hear that the Future Well has a commission from the National Health Service in Great Britain to figure out what to do with an old hospital building in London that's been shut down for a few years, with the idea to better engage the community around their health. And as a history buff, that reminded me of the Peckham experiment and the Pioneer Health Center in England in the 20s, which created exactly that but didn't survive the transition to the National Health Service. So it seems like a little bit of deja vu all over again. Can you tell us a little bit about this very exciting project that you're working on?
Yeah, it's there's a project. It's called the St. Charles. It's in Notting Hill in London. It was built in about 1880, so it sort of looks like an old Ivy League campus. And, you know, due to the changing nature of healthcare, you know, we're not hospitalizing people as much anymore. And since 1880, we've built, you know, more modern hospitals. They just decided to shut it down, and they came to us and said, well, what should we do with this? And that's the challenge that we had. It was interesting because, you know, what do you do with an old space in a neighborhood that, you know, already has a good amount of, you know, workout spaces, a good amount of living spaces, a good amount of community centers. But what it doesn't have is a lot of places to just, you know, meet and greet and get whole fresh food and grow your own food and just have this sort of interesting spaces that expand your mind and, you know, are well curated so that it's paying attention to what's really interesting coming to the internet and inviting people into sort of, you know, almost a rundown neighborhood, actually, and inspiring people to use their minds. But we found out that, you know, it was sort of a depressed area, and kids were sort of just hanging around all day. But they're on their computers a lot. And I was really inspired by this program here in New York that teaches kids how to code over, you know, a couple weekends in the summertime, you know, code software and web applications. Because right now, developers are getting, you know, $75 to $100 an hour to develop websites and web applications. So we came up with a whole program that enabled the children and the young adults in the area to learn how to code, because, you know, $75 to $100 an hour is obviously respectable living. And these are just the simple solutions that somehow people aren't thinking about right now.
Jay, you've shared with us a lot of inspiring ideas today, but we'd like to ask all of our guests this final question. When you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovation, and who should our listeners at Conversations be keeping an eye on?
I think the most exciting thing for me in innovations right now are the bicycle sharing programs that are happening in London and Paris, just getting started here in the States and Denver right now. B-Cycle launched just a few months ago. And that to me is really interesting because if you visit these places and you see thousands of people riding around on these bicycles, it's a whole new layer of transportation in a community. But not only that, you're often riding with someone else. And I think that's really important, because when relationships happen around, when activities happen around relationships, that changes your behavior.
Today we've been speaking with Dr. Jay Parkinson of Hello Health and the Future Well. Jay, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. This week's bright idea focuses on the practice of everyday heroism. The Heroic Imagination Project was created by Stanford psychologist Dr. Philip Zimbardo, who's passionate about inspiring people to take heroic action. As a prominent researcher who has studied the human psychology behind both good and evil, he says heroes can be created, and through training, people can transform their innate desire to do the right thing into the ability to actually do it. Based on the most recent research in social psychology, the project targets children and adults through programs in schools, summer camps, community groups, and even corporate workshops. The programs consist of classroom learning, hands-on exercises, and then the opportunity for students to practice their heroism in the real world, starting small with doing something every day to make someone feel good. Dr. Zimbardo hopes to bring the concept of heroism, a concept which he believes has been diminished over the last decades, to the forefront of worldwide thought. Creating a world full of heroes by teaching individuals and groups how to stand up, speak out, and act when duty calls, now that's a bright idea. This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.